Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, where it's rather damp tonight. Welcome to my wild world. This is going to be an outstanding show. We've got a great guest tonight, everybody, so get a comfortable seat and share with us for the next hour as we visit one of the most fascinating people and naturalist, educator. Ofi Fanoki Joe is going to be with us in a few moments. And, of course, as always, technical responsibilities are being taken over by Henry May way down in Mississippi. And, of course, my cohort and the gentleman who puts together all the fabulous Wild World news, Dr. Henry Day. Doctor, what do we got tonight?
Well, tonight we're going to do the animal news kind of quick because I'm excited about our guest tonight.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's start out with in Providence, Rhode Island. Authorities said four adults, a child, and a dog had been bitten by a suspected rabid fox. The fox terrorized the neighborhood and made people afraid to leave their homes for about 10 hours Sunday before it was captured and euthanized. None of those bitten was seriously hurt, but they're all probably going to have rabies shots.
Yep.
Have you ever had rabies shots, Mr. Batson?
No, can't say that I have.
I've been lucky, too.
Believe me, I'm not disappointed.
With all the scars over your body, I'm surprised that you haven't been there a bit.
No.
That's another story.
Knock on wood.
All right, well, here's some good news. Traverse City, Michigan, state federal wildlife biologists verified tracks of two gray wolves were discovered in Sheboygan County. They say this is the strongest evidence that the wolf pack may be roaming in the northern lower peninsula. Although they said the wolves were driven to extinction during the last late part of the century because of overhunting, but they say they're returning to the peninsula now, and that's a really good sign.
That's outstanding. You know, I've always said wolves are probably the most misunderstood of all of Mother Nature's creatures. So I think because of the education due to the various documentaries done by Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, they put them in a better light. I'll tell you, 30 years ago when I lectured with wolves, it was a completely different attitude than it is today when we lecture with them. So people are realizing how important they are.
Yeah, and you have two of the most beautiful wolves I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, but we're a little prejudiced, but anyway. Go ahead.
All right, let's see. Here's a sad and acute story from Huntington, Arkansas. A man died at a Fort Smith hospital after collapsing while trying to protect his livestock from a fire. He died outside of his barn, but the cute thing is what started the fire. He had a heat lamp on some little tiny litter of kittens. He was trying to keep them warm, and due to that, he lost his barn and his livestock and his life.
Well, that's probably the most depressing story you've told in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, but
glad you related
okay.
That one. The cats were okay. Well, good. Yeah,
the cats were okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right, here we are in Santa Barbara, California. Whale slasher. Okay, well, Michelle Berman of the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History and a crew cut open carcasses of whales and dolphins that washed up on the shore to study what may be killing them. Now, here's the thing. Researchers often have to stand knee-deep in blood and slice through the fatty whale oils, which can stick to their hair and skin for years.
Oh. Wow.
Yes, now there's something I never thought about before. And also, after the last story.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I have no comment to that story.
Okay, well, let's get on with it then. Okay, the big news this week is the rhesus macaque that's running wild through St. Petersburg. Have you seen that on the news?
No.
Well, I guess he has a website now.
The monkey has a website.
The monkey has a website and has so many fans. And I guess it's part of the original family that when Johnny Weissmuller made the Tarzan movies in Florida,
yeah.
I think it was like in the 40s, they brought like a half a dozen of the rhesus monkeys over to film the movie.
Uh-huh.
And this is like the fifth or sixth generation of that original family.
Now where's this rhesus macaque running loose at?
St. Petersburg, Tampa, St. Petersburg area.
Well, they shot all the Tarzan films in Silver Springs. How far is that from?
It's not very far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty close to Tampa.
Because I know that they did that, because I took the Silver Springs tour.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's
tour.
Why I know that. Good luck catching that monkey, because they're so smart.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know from experience, the rhesus monkeys. I remember you had a rhesus monkey named Virgil.
Yeah.
He was quite a character.
Yes, we did. Well, they don't compare to baboons. We have the baby baboon we're raising right now, and it's pretty extraordinary. Same old thing. You have to be smarter than what you're working with, so. So they're probably in big trouble. The
yeah,
monkey will do
well.
Quite well. So
okay,
what else,
well,
Henry?
Well, part of I think we're just going to stop there because the animal news tonight has been just a little out there, and we're going to leave it as it is.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we went on a strange twist there.
Oh, I know, because I want to get on with it. Tonight's guest.
I'm excited.
I am, too. He's in the Country Music Hall of Fame. He's a singer and songwriter, and he's performed at the Grand Ole Opry, as well as countless other television programs. His songs have been recorded and performed by such artists as Roy Orbison, love Roy Orbison, Anita Bryant, Porter Wagoner, Moon Mulligan, and countless other country singers. He also performed for troops overseas in the 60s, and he has toured with such notables such as the Man in Black himself, Johnny Cash, Old No Show, George Jones, Ferlin Husky, Conway Twitty, Dottie West, Minnie Pearl, and numerous others. But in the early 70s, Dick Flood disappeared in the 750-square-mile Ophifenokee Swamp in southeastern Georgia. And years later, out of the swamp came a man who would be a noted naturalist and wildlife educator known as Ophifenokee Joe. Teaching about the critters of the swamp and writing beautiful music about the wildlife that calls this swamp home. And I've got a CD, and I have to tell you folks, one of my favorite songs, and I have a personal love and admiration for them, is a song called Old Black Bear. We're going to listen to Old Black Bear before we welcome Dick Flood, Ophifenokee Joe, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Laying in the shade, playing in the sun. Old Black Bear knows how to have fun. Rain or shine, he don't mind. Old Black Bear gets along just fine. Old Black Bear, living in the woods, taking life easy like a black bear should. Wouldn't change nothing even if he could. Old Black Bear, living in the woods. Now if you're going looking for Old Black Bear, there's some things you need to know. Old Black Bear ain't too friendly. You better take it slow. He's fast enough to catch a deer, and you could be his next meal. Or he might pay you no mind at all. That depends on how he feels. Old Black Bear, living in the woods, taking life easy like a black bear should. Wouldn't change nothing even if he could. Old black bear living in the woods.
Oh, man. Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services would like to welcome the man himself, Ophi Finoki Joe. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing just fine.
Well, I'm going to have to tell you something. You sent me the CD, and I had it. Oh, yeah, I had it in my pickup truck, and I've been listening to it, and I told my wife, I said, you have to hear this. And I played a couple songs for her, and they have just stuck in her head. In fact, she enjoyed it, but you ever had a song just stick in your head, like, all the time?
Several times in my life, I have.
I mean, being a songwriter, that probably happens quite often.
Yeah, not quite often, no, just every now and then it does, though, yeah. I'm not sure it happens to almost everybody one time or another, I would think.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. I think this
was a
great
thing. Well, yeah, you got to turn the radio on and listen to something else for a while, yeah.
Well, it all started in the 60s. When you were down in Nashville, Tennessee, which I have to say I had an opportunity to go down there and do a couple of the sports shows and spend some time in downtown Nashville, and I absolutely love that town.
Is that right? I'm sure it's changed a lot since I was there. Gosh, I'm sure they paved a few roads.
Well, Ernest Tubbs' record store's still there.
Yeah.
And they have that stage, and I assume you probably had performed on that stage in the record shop there, I assume.
Yeah, way back. See, the way back, I don't know what it's like today, but back then, the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night, it only paid union scale, something like $11.45 to sing a song on it. And all those big artists that hit records, they could make a lot of money on Saturday night, so they started being gone on Saturdays, and they needed people to fill in, so that's how come I was on the Opry so often. And then they passed a ruling that said if you want to remain a member of the Opry, you got to be here 26 weeks out of the year. And so they no longer needed me as a guest, and I wasn't on there much anymore. But that's how come I was on there at that time. I didn't have a hit record, you know, but I was on the Opry.
Well, you had hit records, though, by other artists that had performed it, correct?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, no, I had records. Let's put it this way. I did have records that I made that were in the charts, but I'm talking about a really big hit record. And I had several songs recorded that were really big hits, yes.
Of all the artists that you worked with in those days, who was your favorite?
Hank Snow was my favorite. Hank Snow was a favorite. I love the way he played that guitar. The singing, I love the singing too, but the way he played that guitar, I just love that. I tried to imitate it. I never have mastered it the way he did. He was my favorite way back, the very beginning.
Well,
I liked
them all.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They're just, most of those artists, the country artists, they just seem more like real people to me.
Most of them are, you bet. Most of them are down to earth, just as country as they sound on record. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
So what's your impressions of country music today?
Well, it's not really to me. It's not really country. It's I don't know what.
don't know what to call it either.
There's some well-written songs and great singers and great musicians and stuff, but it's a whole different ball game nowadays. My stuff was always pretty simple. Just three chord melodies, you know, and two step rhythms, you know, and it's a whole different ball game now.
The artists then, they were pretty remarkable. I mean, as far as being looked up to and so forth in Nashville, weren't they?
A lot of them, just like today, a lot of them wrote their own songs, and
Of the current artists, who do you think? Go ahead.
I didn't retire from that. I just kind of left.
What actually happened, Joe, when you decided you were going to go leave Nashville and go to the swamp?
What actually happened?
Yeah.
I couldn't I can't explain it. I just had a deeper feeling. I had to do something else.
What?
I was kind of burned out with the country music business in a lot of ways. I'm kind of worn out and burnt out, I guess you'd call it. And anyhow, I wanted to do something else, and I did.
And you took off for the Okefenokee.
Yeah.
Was this the first time you'd gone into that part of the country, or?
Oh, no, I'd been there many a time before I finally moved there. Yeah. Many a time. Yeah. Places back in that swamp are just beautiful.
And you know, people that have never experienced that type of world, that type of habitat, they just have no, when you say it's beautiful, it actually is beautiful.
It's constantly changing, but to me that's kind of a peaceful thing. It's the changes are natural. Everything is I guess you'd call it. I have a feeling of closeness to this round ball we call the Earth. I really feel close to the Earth and all the natural world all around us, and I have a deeper appreciation of it and a more better understanding and so forth. And I. For the past 30-some years, I've been trying to share that with the rest of the world. We've gone a long ways with our technology, but all the technology we have put together can't stop a gust of wind outside or change the temperature or things like that. And the Earth that we live on, the natural forces that govern it are still intact. And I'd put it that Mother Earth is still in charge, no matter how smart or important we think we are, no matter how far we go with our technology. This Earth, we need to live on this Earth, so we need to learn how to better cooperate with the natural processes all around us. And like at this very moment, every leaf on every tree is working for the Earth. Every blade of grass, every insect, every living thing in that natural world works for this Earth, and they're responsible for keeping the Earth like it is so people like us can live on it. And I really think that all of us need to be paying more attention to that. So that's why I do what I do.
Amen.
Well, you know, we do basically the same thing. I mean, you go to schools with animals, and I do the same thing, and you realize a lot of these young people, their outdoor experience is in front of a flat screen, whether it be a computer or a television.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like, and you know this just as well as I do, is for people to actually experience and see these things in person.
Yeah, everything around us in that natural world has been designed perfectly for the job it's been created to do. And each and every animal and plant works at its job its entire lifetime. It minds its own business, takes only what it needs and nothing else. These animals like the snakes that I bring, I'll be doing seminars this weekend starting tomorrow in Columbia, South Carolina at the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic.
Right.
And I'll have the snakes that are native to the area. I don't have exotic snakes. I just have native snakes.
Right.
And they'll be teaching so many lessons, especially for people like who love the outdoors. And you know, I know guys that are willing to grab a 200-pound wild hog and wrap them around a tree, but they see a snake and they go, "Whoa, go with me!" They whip that tree.
That's right. My wife.
A little understanding is all it takes.
Well, you're right. Understanding and education.
Yeah, as I say, the education, not legislation, is the answer for all the things we do. Really. If people aren't understanding why there's laws, the laws will not be obeyed. They'll try to get away with it all the time.
Well, that's true. What's when you see these young people, and what's some of the, I know what they usually ask me, what's their first questions that they'll ask you when they have a chance to talk to you in person?
First questions, one of the first questions people ask me, "You ever been bit?" I've been bitten by all kinds of animals, alligators, bears, bobcats, snakes, but the worst bite I ever got came from a woman. she got my sons, the house, the car, everything.
I have that same story.
Thinking about it, it hurts. So I try not to think about it.
Well, I've always said that I'd much rather go in a room with about a half a dozen diamondback rattlesnakes than my wife when she's a little PO'd.
Ooh, yeah, you bet. Yeah, you can tell what a snake's going to do.
I shouldn't say this, but her nickname is the bipedal wolverine. So.
You're in danger.
I am in danger. In fact, one of the standing jokes is that, I'll feed you to something is what you tell me what you said. So I always tell my friends, if I disappear one day and they can't find anything, I said, start going through the tiger cages.
You got animals there, Willie, so you're right, yeah.
Yes, we have, I have these two bears, and I have to tell you, last year, my male bear, we finally got him taken care of because every spring he'd want to kill me because he's thinking that I was interested in the female bear. And I tell him, I says, I have no interest whatsoever. It's all yours, buddy. But he
made
him understand. I'm sorry.
It's hard to make him understand things.
And you know, it's not bullhead, it's just the way they are.
One track mind.
I'm sure you noticed that with your bears, like in that time of the year, how the male walks when he slides his foot.
I watch them follow females and fall at the earth and sniff their paw, you know, and make bear sounds like, one time for 18 months, I had five American black bears on the McCare there, and I recorded every sound I could get from them. I recorded, and I did a special documentary for the local TV station in Waycross, Georgia, interpreting what bears say to each other.
Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
It's amazing. I can't imitate half the sounds. I imitate some of them. But that song about old black bear,
right.
That's everything I learned about. I say the most important thing, my job was to feed the animals, make sure they had plenty of water, and talk to the people about them.
Right.
But I say the most important thing that I did with those animals was learn from them.
Oh, yes.
Everywhere I go, I share some of the secrets, I call them, that I've learned from the animals. But that song about old black bear, that's mm-hmm. everything I learned from, especially a bear called Blackjack. He came from Hiawassee, Georgia. He's an American black bear, but he weighed almost right at 750 pounds.
Whoa!
He was giant. He wasn't a world record, but he was big. And when he
yes.
stood up, I couldn't reach the top of his head. You know, he was like a big, almost like a grizzly bear, but
mm-hmm.
you know, just big. But friendly. Oh, he was friendly. You know, you have to watch a few things about him, but I don't know if he had it. But go ahead.
There's a distinctive sound when they click their teeth together.
Yeah.
Which is not a good sound. In fact, I've warned people that have gone in bear country during the breeding season that if you hear that clicking sound and you don't see anything, just walk away from it. Then I was talking to a guide up in Ontario, Canada, and I asked him if he'd ever heard that. He said that he had, and he says it was from a bear and he was over a woman's body. Yeah, so that was. But you know, I've always said about the bears and the cubs, and you'll probably agree with me. At least I hope you do that. They're as smart as the great apes. They just don't have the facial expressions.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I tell us. Go ahead.
I don't know much about apes.
I tell the old story about my bears. I had these huge horse troughs in there for their water. Well, the old male bear, it gets down about two-thirds. He's got tipped over. I walked out there, and he had this horse trough tipped over, and he was sitting on top of it. And I told him, I said, now, Buck. And I spoke to him just as if I'm speaking to anybody. I said, I'm going to go get the hose. I says, there's no way I can fill that trough back up unless you get off of it and turn it back over. And I went in the house and come back out, got the hose, come around the corner, and you know, that trough was sitting in perfect position, and he was sitting in it like he would sit in a bathtub. waiting for me to fill that trough up.
I don't know if you understood what you said or you just figured that's what he should do.
You know, he probably had me figured out in the area. I don't know if he did. No, they get so that they're about like a dog, you know. There's certain things they'll hear you say, they know what that's all about, time to eat and so forth and whatever.
I always made it a point to use the same word, like I say, chop-chop, which meant food was coming, you know. Or I'd say, see you later, that meant they wouldn't see me again until later, you know. And
right.
The certain things I would say that all the critters, except the snakes, of course, but they gathered pretty much, they could understand certain things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. We're raising a young bobcat right now. That's quite the challenge as well. I know you've had them before. And
yeah. But what I tell people and what I really believe is this: that real wild animals really don't make good pets. They might make interesting pets, but if you want a pet, you want something that's going to do what you want it to do, be like
right.
you want it to be. And there's not a wild animal that I know that will ever recognize a human as its master.
No.
And they're not only are they meant to be free, but they have to be free so they can go out and do what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
All the wild animals, this is what we teach kids in the schools about, that they've got responsibilities. One thing, they only go where they're needed. If there's a job that's being done anywhere on the planet to maintain or possibly correct the balance, sooner or later the right wild animal is going to get there to do the job. And they got responsibilities, so they have to be free to do that. And they have to be independent. They
yep.
get like a litter of raccoons. For example, the first 6 months or so, they really need that mama, and she really gives them a lot of attention and a lot of, you might even call it love, but she really gives them a lot of attention. But after they get to a certain age, they become competition to each other, and they have to go out and be free elsewhere. They can't hang out. They can't stay together.
Well,
they don't need the love and affection anymore. Many a kid's heart has been broken by his pet raccoon.
I'm telling you.
Creatures in the cage to love him, and the raccoon all of a sudden nails him in the ear or bites him on the nose or something. You know? And it's a sad thing, but it's just the way it is. Don't make good pets. I tell people when snakes wag their tail, it's not because they love you.
Well, like I've always said, they're not good pets, but maybe close friends.
Yeah, it may be interesting pets. Maybe, you know, friends, yeah. To a certain extent, they can be friends, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we've always, the way that we look at it is they're great ambassadors for the animals in the wild. And when
yeah,
we speak
absolutely.
To a group of young people, we realize we're not speaking to a group of zoologists or biologists, but they're people that are going to grow up and they're going to vote and they're going to know why we need areas like the Okefenokee Swamp and magnificent national parks like Yellowstone and so forth.
I've always said this protecting, like if you want to protect an animal like the river otter, you can't just say he's protected and you can't catch him, you can't shoot him, you can't trap him, whatever. You have to protect the river the otter lives in and the fish he eats and everything all over the food chain, the whole nine yards. You have to protect areas, not just one certain animal. That's why you have to lay aside certain areas so that animals can keep existing. I don't know if we'll ever learn that or not. I don't know.
Well, it's a big job ahead for many of the educators across the country, as yourself. And if we can reach half a dozen people a day, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Because
we're going to be on this planet for a while.
Yeah.
Another one of your favorite songs on the CD, it's a little ditty called It's Only a Tree. Henry, let's hear It's Only a Tree, then we're going to go into our PSAs. We've got tonight Okefenokee Jove.
You know what
and,
that means?
Tell
me. Okefenokee is a combination of, you know, the Creek Indians used to live in that part of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The Creek Indian.
Yep.
Muscogee Creek.
Right.
And, It's a combination of Creek Indian words. When translated, it means water with no feet. the whites call it the land of the trembling earth.
Oh,
a lot of floating islands. Land of the trembling earth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what Okefenokee means.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on tonight. We're gonna take a little break, everybody. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World, and this is Blog Talk Radio.
It's only a tree, just one more tree. Who cares if it lives or it dies? It's only a tree, what's one less tree? Who'd miss it? You'd be surprised.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
You don't have to be a firefighter to keep your home safe from wildland fire. Homeowners and communities play a large role in fire safety. Take simple measures, such as keeping your streets and roads clear so that fire engines can easily maneuver. Make sure fire hydrants are visible and accessible. More importantly, clear flammable vegetation around structures, on large lots, and along roadsides. These simple prevention measures can go a long way toward reducing the danger of a fire to your home and community.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of RAD. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. Remember, if you're partying this holiday season, don't drink and drive. Got it? It's just not worth it. Doesn't make sense. Thank you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everybody. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World, and we are being underwritten by iKids Fishing. It's a kids' fishing website where you can upload pictures of a child any age with their fish sorted by age or species. It will give millions of kids a chance to compare and show off their fish caught with other kids at the same age from all across the country, all around the world. Very exciting. You want to go to wewantyou.com. It's wewanchu.com. See what it's all about. And by the way, once a month, they're going to award a weekend fishing trip, including a cottage and a 16-foot rental boat at We Want You Cottages in western New York State. It's a random drawing. That's the iKids fishing site, and you want to check that out. And they're also, well, they have a television program. I think this is a great idea, the iKids fishing TV show, where kids teaching kids on how to catch panfish on the cheap. So that's wewantyou.com, iKids Fishing. We thank them for being an underwriter for our program. Tonight's guest, he's a legend among naturalists, and he's also a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, songwriter. He's taken those songwriting skills, and he's fine-tuned them to the natural world with some pretty amazing creations. Here tonight on Larry Batson's Wild World, had the pleasure of talking, chatting with Ofi Finoki Joe. Joe, it's been great.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad we had a chance to talk.
Hey, you've had some adventures, I know, in the Ofi Finoki, and going down there, and I guess you say you collect all your own reptiles, right?
Yeah, I don't encourage other people to do that because most people don't know how to do it. And
right.
Without hurting themselves or hurting the animal one, you know. So yeah, I call my own. Yeah, I don't have to get many anymore. I've learned how to really, you know. There's two different worlds of as far as reptiles. I guess animals. The hunter, the one who collects them, and the one who keeps them. The keeper and the hunter.
Right.
And there's two different schools of knowledge there. You got, if you know how to take care of the snakes in captivity. Most people that make good keepers don't make good hunters because they haven't had that experience. But most hunters don't make good keepers because they haven't had experience in keeping them.
there's an act to it.
I've been fortunate though that now I've learned, and over the years I have very few casualties. I lose very few, and I don't have to catch any more all the time like I used to. The snakes are they're hardy. They're doing well.
Go ahead.
Okay. I don't have a big collection. I tell people I just have enough to do the job.
Well, I raise my hand with that as well, because I used to keep 50 or 60 species of poisonous snakes alone. And nowadays, no, nothing near that at all.
That would be a tremendous job, keeping them all healthy and clean. Even keeping them fed would be an expensive job, too.
Well, it is, and even those snakes, as far as animals in captivity, they're probably some of the most economical.
Oh, yeah.
Easiest, really.
Yeah, easiest, because they don't have to eat as often. They don't need as much water. A lot of times their water needs are supplied by the food items. They got to be kept clean. But they don't require a whole lot. The temperature has to be right for them, you know. They don't require a meal every day, water every day, you know, things like that, like other animals do. That's why snakes have got it over the other critters.
they really do.
They can survive situations that an American black bear couldn't, you know, and things like that.
And they, you know, it doesn't take much to support them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But if you got 60 of them, it does.
Well, you got a point there. That's absolutely true. So you get down the Ophifenokee, the big guy that you run into is the Eastern Diamondbacks.
Yeah. I call him Mr. Magnificent.
He is, isn't he?
The Diamondback rattlesnake teaches so many lessons. When I do my little presentation with the Eastern Diamondback rattlesnake, it teaches people where the only real danger is when it comes to a venomous reptile. You know, the people could see it in the movies, read about it in books, hear people talk about it. But until they actually see it live and in person, it doesn't really sink in. An Eastern Diamondback rattlesnake, if it's too far from any cover, if it's not sure it can escape from something like you or me, invariably it'll choose to coil and face its adversary no matter what it is. It's not going to run. It's like it's afraid to try and turn its back on you. It'll coil and face its intruder, but at the same time it's not going to attack. You know, if there's one thing the wild animals taught me, is the rule they follow is so simple. If you don't need it, leave it. If it's not something you can use, don't touch it, don't play with it, just mind your own business, just leave it alone. And a true wild animal really will attack with intent to kill only what it plans on eating. And they only eat what they've been created to eat. And we can't make them eat anything else. I tell kids this, you talk about character, there's so much we could learn from the wild creatures and from the plants. Every single day in the life of a blade of grass, it'll take from the earth, the sun, and the rain only what it needs and nothing else. The rule is simple, if you don't need it, leave it. Which also explains the technology of the earth we live on. I ask people, have you ever wondered what keeps the earth like it is so humans can live on it? Or how did it get the way it is to begin with? Exactly how did God do that? It has always been the team effort of every leaf on every tree, every blade of grass, every living thing in that natural world, working at its job, minding its own business, taking only what it needs. If you don't need it, leave it.
Well, you know, that's, go ahead.
That's why I call what I do Earth Day every day. Because for every living thing in God's creation, Earth Day is every day. They all work for the earth. Everything the bear does out there in the woods is keeping. Every time it tears up a palmetto plant, it helps it grow better next year because it cropped the plant. Every time it runs down a deer, which it sure can do, it'll get the weak one, the sick one, the slow one, help keep the herd strong. Every time it defecates, it fertilizes and it plants seeds. And when a bear dies, just like when a blade of grass dies, it'll naturally recycle back into the earth and become food in other ways for other life on earth. There's a constant cycle going on all around us, with every living thing totally willing and devoted to cooperate with that one plan, take only what you need. And that's something.
Well, and you can probably take that on to the current situation in housing and real estate.
Yeah.
When I saw all these folks here in outside of Indianapolis buy these huge or have built these huge monstrous homes. Hmm. With more space than a dozen people would ever need. And it was just, I think that's with a lot of and now people can't afford these huge, big homes because, as you said, they didn't need it.
Gosh, there's a lot added to it, too. Your heat bill, your everything, keeping up to the big home. I got a little cabin in the woods here. I designed it myself. This little four room house. That's good enough.
And where exactly is it? I'm not
I've relocated to South Carolina. I moved here about 4 years ago. I'm in South Carolina now.
That's a beautiful. We were down there a couple of years ago, down at Santee Cooper.
Yeah, that's beautiful over there. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. In fact, I think one of the most chilling sights I saw was these trees that came out of the lake, Lake Marion, I think is what that body of water is, and the person told me that those holes in the side of these dead trees were made by ivory-billed woodpeckers.
I bet. I'm sure they were. Yeah.
And I thought that.
Way back in the day. Yep.
It was just chilling. I thought, wow, that's extraordinary. That's.
I don't remember what I sent you. Did you have you ever heard a song that I wrote that's called "How the Wolves Would Howl"?
No, I didn't hear that.
I'm gonna have to send you a copy of that. See what you think of that. You're in the rules, right?
yeah, we have to.
All right, I'll send you a copy.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, I've got to get down in your neck of the woods sometime, just to hang out for a little while and chat.
But if you get down this way, come this way, give me a holler. I'm not always here because, I'm still going out all over the southeast to schools and Indian powwows and stuff. I do a lot of presentations all around the South. I said, but call, come on down. Come visit. I got plenty of meat in the freezer and plenty of stuff. I grow most of my own food.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I live the old way. Yeah.
Well, that's the best way. That's absolutely. What's the most extraordinary thing that you've ever seen in your years in the Opheafanoki or there in South Carolina? What one thing sticks out in your mind that you saw in the natural world?
It's all beautiful. I couldn't tell you the most exciting thing. I just getting up in the morning and seeing the sun streaking through the pines. I couldn't tell you any particular one thing. It's just all just beautiful.
It just kind of all blends together after a while, doesn't it?
Yes. I liked learning the plants, the way we've identified all the plants, and the birds and all the natural habitat, everything. Edible plants, medicinal plants, all that kind of stuff. I'm into all that deep. And I like to brag about living off the land. I catch a lot of my own food, grow my own food, or shoot at one. I mind my own business just like a bear does.
Well, that's usually for the best.
I try to stay out of trouble.
And sometimes that's the most difficult thing to do.
I've been working on an idea. I tell people my songs are all love songs. The difference is they're not about people; they're about the natural world. Mm-hmm. But I've got a lot of people songs too. I had a lot of songs recorded back when I was in Nashville. The biggest thing that happened with the music business was that "Troubles Back in Town" song. It was the number one country song of the year in 1962. And I tell people it only took me 10 minutes to write that song. The most effective song I ever wrote took me 10 minutes to write. as far as making some money, or earning my keep. And that's what put my name in the Hall of Fame there. That song, "Troubles Back in Town."
And who recorded that?
The Wilburn Brothers on Decca.
Okay, I see it right here.
1962. Yeah.
That had to be quite thrilling. To have your work appreciated like that.
It's a thrill to hear your song over the radio. Everywhere you go, and you turn the radio on, there's that song playing.
What was it like the first time you heard it on the radio?
It's a thrill. All I can say is it's a thrill. It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Do you still have lots of friends in Nashville?
But most of them are gone. It's been 35 years since I was there, I think, something like that. Most of them have passed on by now. There's still a few. I still have a few friends there.
Well, they needed to. They should have came to the Ophifenoki with you and had a little bit of that clean living. And it would have probably added years to their life.
Maybe so. Anyhow, I'm thinking about doing another CD, but this time with some of the love songs I've got about people. But I'm not sure I'm going to do it yet. It costs a lot of money to do this. If you want to do it right, you got to go to the right studio and get the right musicians and stuff. And it costs to do it, you know what I mean?
Well, I thought one of the most remarkable things I saw when I was in Nashville, at 9 o'clock in the morning, we'd be walking around town killing time, and everywhere you looked, there'd be somebody carrying a guitar or a fiddler or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, full of hopefuls, you bet. Yeah, man.
What do they figure out of all the people that come down there to be a quote-unquote star actually get that accomplished? 1 out of 10,000?
Who knows? But there's a song about that, "The Broken Heart for Every Light on Broadway." Who knows? Who knows how many passes? During the time I was one of them, I was a young hopeful, you know. You know, Nashville really is a place for people who already have their hit record. It's not really the place to get started, you know. But anyhow.
Well, it's just like the little, the club down there right on the main drag through town. I think it's going to come to me. One right behind the Opry.
It used to be Tootsie's. I don't know what it is.
Tootsie's, that's it. Of course, you hear so much about it, then you go in and go, whoa, this place is...
hole in the wall, huh?
Kind of rough.
A hole in the wall.
Yeah, he'd be walking down there at 10 o'clock in the morning, and of course they've already got people playing in there, and there's some guy out there dressed like Porter Wagner and singing his heart out for three people in the bar, and I thought, man. But it was totally a great time.
You enjoyed it, I'm glad.
In fact, I told my wife, I said, sometime when we have a couple days off, I said, we'll just go to downtown Nashville, stay, rest all day, and then just go hit all the honky-tonks and whatever night. I said, we'll absolutely have a blast. Enjoy every moment of it. Well, Dick, it's been absolutely a pleasure to have you on tonight.
I'm glad you found me.
Well, I'd like to thank my good friend Steve Hottie. He was on the program a few weeks ago. I had called him up, and right away he said, you need to contact Dick Flood, Ophifenoki Joe. And I said, well, you know, I don't know him, but I do know of him because I'd seen it was a PBS special they did on you years ago, I believe.
Swamp-wise, just like Streetwise,
yeah.
Swamp-wise.
Right, yeah. And it was...
we got an Emmy. They got an Emmy Award for the South, whatever. Swamp-wise.
Well, and I'm thinking, I hadn't been doing it all that long, so I found it quite inspiring to think that, you know, it is possible to actually try and make a career out of doing this crazy wildlife education work.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing it. You're doing good. I'm glad.
Well,
on my T-shirt, on the back of one of my T-shirts, it says "Streetwise is cool, Swampwise is awesome."
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, that's I've more love and the animals that live in that part of the country. It's just from the cottonmouths and the diamondbacks to the black bears, the armadillos. Even though the old possum that seems to be the wander around as the food chain for everything.
Yeah, that's the home of Pogo.
Well, that's right. Somebody had brought that up to me. You know, they said, you remember the old...
I'm going to be at the Swamp Fest in the first weekend in April there. They do a Swamp Fest in Waycross, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
I'll be doing shows there on the 2nd and 3rd, I think, of April. Yeah. Now, I've got a website, you know, OkieFinokieJoe.com.
Well, I was getting ready to bring that up. And there they can order your T-shirts.
Yeah, all that stuff.
And your CDs and your DVDs and all this great music that you recorded that I was just blown away. I'm going to tell you the truth. When I got the CD and I had popped it in my truck and I was making my daily trip to Walmart to buy tiger food. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And you know,
Walmart.
Yes. What's the closest Walmart to you?
25 miles.
25 miles. You know.
I chose to be here. I like it out in the woods.
Well, you know, that Walmart, that's a whole ecosystem in itself.
That's right. Yeah, I don't get there often.
It's pretty scary on some days.
There ain't a whole lot I need from Walmart. You know?
Well, I'll bet not. So some of you're going to be in South Carolina tomorrow. What was the event again?
It's called the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. I've been doing it for 25 years, every last weekend in March.
Wow.
So I do seminars there about this. It's called Earth Day. It's about the snakes.
Uh-huh.
Snake safety type thing. Of course, like I say, the snakes teach a lot of lessons in tolerance, responsibility, character. Any wild animal, any plant could teach us lessons if we listen or watch and learn.
Well, that's true, and I think every day how blessed we are to be around these things and hopefully capture that lesson. In fact, I was talking the other day about old Joe, and you asked me, because when I heard your song about old Joe the turtle, it got me, because I have an alligator snapping turtle. It's about 200 pounds, and his name is old Joe. I said, what's the chances of that happening?
I wrote the song about a Galapagos tortoise that's down at, not a Galapagos, it's something, I forget what it is, a tortoise down there at Edisto Island Serpentarium in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
on Edisto Island. Anyhow, I started writing that song about that turtle, but turtles can teach lessons, you know, that's what the song talks about. Lessons,
well,
especially in patience and perseverance, you know.
Well, you have to figure there's nothing more patient than something that can be on this planet for 150 years or so, and just every day is just, well, maybe I'll find something to eat today, and maybe I won't. If I don't, I'll find it tomorrow. No big hurry.
If I can't get there from here, I'll just find another way to go. I'm going to keep going, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we want to thank, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, our underwriters, iKids Fishing, the website where kids can submit their pictures of their fish that they've caught. And if you want to go to wewantyou.com with all the information, also how you can win a weekend fishing trip way up there in Chautauqua Lake, New York, and get into some of that green pan fishing and muskie fishing. I'd like to thank Henry May for technical responsibilities tonight and doing such a fantastic job. Also, Dr. Henry Day for the animal news and assisting tonight. But I'd most like to thank Ophi Finoki Joe, Dick Flood. It's been fantastic, Dick, and we really appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope that in the future we can have you on again.
I'll be glad to. And come see me.
I absolutely will. I'll surprise you one day.
I don't think I'm going to get up to Indiana, but you might come down south sometime.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. If I was down there, I don't think I'd go very many places myself. We want to go out tonight with one of Joe's songs that I thoroughly enjoyed. It's called An Eagle When It Flies. This is Larry Batson. Don't forget next week, 10 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to the wilderness areas of Rocky Mountain National Park, Estes Park, Colorado, and talk to one of the, he's just a mountaineer in all, he's fantastic. Michael Hodges out there at McGregor's Lodge, he's going to be on. We're going to talk about his adventures up in the Great Rocky Mountains. Once again, I'd like to thank Dick Flood, Ophi Finoki Joe, and here's an eagle when it flies. And folks, we'll talk to you next week on Larry Batson's Wild World. Have a great week, everybody.
Of all
all the feathered treasures that brighten up our world. Among the most majestic, with its mighty wings unfurled, is a proud and daring eagle as it soars across the sky. A sight to be remembered is an eagle when it flies. A symbol through the ages of courage, strength, and love, exulting in its freedom as it circles high above, adding dignity to splendor in a clear and cloudless sky. Oh, a sight to be remembered is an eagle when it flies. We feel its sense of freedom, feel its sense of pride, with wings upon the wind, so graceful as it glides. And of every feathered wonder that wings across the sky, the one to be revered by all is an eagle when it flies.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.